The following summer, I went to Europe and visited the Bollandists, hoping they would pay me a few compliments on my new book. There, I picked up one piece of information that pleased me greatly. Padre Blason was still alive, though very old, in a hospital in Vienna.
I thought you must be dead. How old you look. Well, you must be all kinds of ages. What years? Don't be coy. What years?
Just over the threshold of 61.
A patriarch. You look even more, though. Do you know how old I am? No, you don't, and I'm not going to tell. But I tell you this much. I shall not see 100 again. How much over that? I tell nobody. But it'll be discovered when I am dead. I may die any time. I may die as we are talking. Then I shall be sure to have the last word, eh? Lancy. Hey, sit down. You look tired. Hey, what is that interesting parcel you have in your hand, eh?
I was told that you were fond of Viennese chocolate.
Keep your voice down, Ramsay, or all those others will want some of my chocolate, and it would probably not be wholesome for them, eh? Oh, you saintly man. I suppose a bottle of really good wine could not be got past the nuns, eh?
I'll do my best.
You are a true friend, Lancy. How is your full scent?
My what?
Don't shout. My hearing is perfectly good. Your full scent. Your madwoman who dominates your life.
She's dead.
Oh. I'm sorry. Well, I thought we might get something about her in your book, but not a word. Why?
Because I've come to no conclusion.
Well, I have been thinking about your full saint, and what I conclude is this. She would never have got past the Bollandists, but she must have been an extraordinary person. A great lover of God and trusting greatly in his love for her.
And the miracle?
Ah, miracles. You and I have looked too deeply into miracles to dogmatize. It seems far more important to me that her life was lived heroically. She endured a hard fate, did the best she could, and kept it up until at last her madness was too powerful for her. Heroism in God's cause is the mark of the Saint Ramsay, not conjuring tricks. So, on All Saints' Day, I do not think you will do anything but good by honoring the name of Mary Dempster in your prayers. Your life has been illuminated by your full saint, and how many can say so much? Have you met the devil yet?
Yes. I met him in Mexico City.
Ah.
He was disguised as a woman. An extremely ugly woman, but unquestionably a woman.
Unquestionably?
Not a shadow or a doubt possible.
Really, Ramsay, you astonish me. You are a much more remarkable fellow than one might suppose, if you forgive me for saying so. The devil certainly changed his sex to tempt St. Anthony the Great, but for a Canadian schoolmaster, one must not be a snob in spiritual things. From your certainty, I gather the devil tempted you with success?
The devil proved to be a very good fellow. He suggested that a little compromise wouldn't hurt me. He even suggested that an acquaintance with him might improve my character.
Well, I find no fault with that. The devil knows corners of us all, of which Christ himself is ignorant. People forget too readily that Satan is Christ's elder brother. On the whole, we treat the devil shamefully, and the worse we treat him, the more he laughs at us.
You were searching for a god to teach you how to be old. Have you found him?
Not so loud. The nuns must not know in what a spiritual state I am. Yes, I have found him. He is the very best of company. Very calm, very quiet, but gloriously alive. We do, but he is. Not in the least a proselytizer or a careerist. Like his sons.
Padre Blazon was much in my mind as I tasted the pleasures of Salzburg, and particularly so after my first visit to the special display called Schöne Madonnen in the cathedral. For here, at last, after having abandoned hope and forgotten my search, I found my little Madonna from Passchendaele. There she was, quite unmistakable, from the charming crown that she wore with such an air to her foot set on a crescent moon. She'd lost her scepter, but not the divine child, a fat, reserved little person who looked out at the world from beneath half-closed eyelids. But the face of the Madonna, was it truly the face of Mary Dempster? No, it was not. Though the hair was very like. Mary Dempster had never been so beautiful in feature, but the expression was undeniably hers. An expression of mercy and love, tempered with perception and penetration. I visited her every day during my week in Salzburg, and when the week was up, I never saw her again. Photography was forbidden in the exhibition. But I needed no pictures. She was mine forever. The mysterious death of Boy Staunton was a 9 days wonder. People who delight in unsolved crimes, for they were certain it must have been a crime, still talk of it. The newspapers published columns about it. Television and radio devoted much time to it.
At about 4 o'clock Monday morning, Boy Staunton's Cadillac convertible was recovered from the waters of Toronto Harbor. The car had been driven into the water at such a speed that it sank about 20 feet out from the pier. Staunton's body was in the driver's seat, his hands gripping the wheel so tightly that the body was only recovered with great difficulty. Apparently some time elapsed after the car drove over the edge but before it filled with water. More curious, police say, is a stone, an ordinary piece of pinkish granite about the size of a small egg, which was found in Staunton's mouth. The stone could have only been there, police say, if the victim or someone unknown had put it there. Investigators are still puzzled. Was it murder or was it suicide? Complicating the case is the revelation that Staunton was about to be appointed Lieutenant Governor of Ontario. Why would a man with such a prospect and with Staunton's well-known sense of duty kill himself?
The funeral was not quite a state funeral, though Denise tried to manage one. She wanted a flag on the coffin and she wanted soldiers, but it was not to be. However, many flags were at half-staff, and she did achieve a very fine turnout of important people, and others who were important because they represented somebody too important to come personally. The reception after the funeral was in the great tradition of such affairs, and the new house Denise had made Boy build in the most desirable of the suburbs was filled even to its great capacity. Denise was wonderfully self-possessed and ran everything perfectly. Or almost perfectly. There was one thing in which she did not succeed.
Of course you'll do the official life.
What official life?
What official life do you suppose?
Oh. Is there to be one?
Yes, there is to be one. As you knew Boy from childhood, there will be a good deal for you to fill in before we come to the part where I can direct you.
How is it official? I mean, what makes it official? Does the government want it or something?
The government has had no time to think about it. But I want it. And I shall do whatever needs to be done about the government. What I want to know now is whether you are going to write it or not.
Well, I want to think it over.
Do that. Frankly, my first choice was Eric Roop. I thought it wanted a poet's touch. But he can't do it, though, considering how many grants Boy wangled for him. I don't know why. But Boy did even more for you. You'll find it a change from those saints you're so fond of. Oh, Susan, darling, how sweet of you to come.
Of course, I didn't write it. The heart attack I had a few days later gave me an excellent excuse for keeping free of anything I didn't want to do. And how could I have written a life of Boy that would have satisfied me and yet saved me from murder at the hands of Denise? And how could I, trained as an historian to suppress nothing, have written a life of Boy without telling all I know about the way he died? And even then, would it have been the truth? I learned something about the variability of truth from Boy himself within an hour of his death. It was like this. Magnus Isengrim didn't bring his famous display of illusions to Canada until 1968. It was at the end of October he came to Toronto for 2 weeks. Through Liesl's intercession, I was able to get Isengrim to come to the school on a Sunday night in the middle of his fortnight's engagement to talk to the boarders about hypnotism. Schoolmasters are without conscience in exacting such favors.
Hypnotist as an all-powerful demon like Svengali, who can make anyone do anything, is, I am afraid, nonsense. Nobody can be made to do anything under hypnotism that is contrary to his wishes. Though, of course, people have wishes that they are unwilling to acknowledge even to themselves.
We mustn't impose on Mr. Isengrim's kindness any longer. I'm afraid there's only time for one more question. Gerald, you've had your hand up for some time.
Sir, will you hypnotize one of us now?
Please. I'm sorry. I never break my rule of not hypnotizing anyone except in performance. And even then, I never hypnotize anyone under 21 without written consent from their parents.
Well, I'm afraid that's all, then. Shall we say thank you to Mr. Isengrim for giving us this precious time from his very busy schedule? Thank you, Magnus. You can see how much that was appreciated.
Johnny, please introduce me to Mr. Isengrim.
Magnus, this is Mr. Boy Staunton, chairman of our board of directors.
Pleasure, Mr. Isengrim, a great pleasure. I'd like to thank you for coming to talk to our boys. And also, by the way, for a great evening in the theater. I saw your show last Thursday.
Yeah, I remember perfectly. Your party was sitting in C-21 to C-25.
How did you know that?
Oh.
How very flattering. And may I ask you a special favor?
Mm-hmm.
How did your brazen head know what was implied in the message it gave to Ruth Tillman? Now, that's caused some extraordinary gossip.
No, Mr. Staunton, I cannot tell you that.
Oh, have I committed a gaffe? Professional secrets and all that?
I can tell you that Brazen Head decided not to name you and tell the audience that your appointment as Lieutenant Governor would be announced on Monday.
But you can't possibly have known. I mean, I haven't had the letter myself more than a couple of hours before going to the theater. I had it with me, as a matter of fact.
Very true, and you have it now, inside your right-hand breast pocket. Oh, don't worry, I haven't picked your pocket. But when you lean forward, however slightly, the tip of a long envelope made of thick, creamy paper can just be seen. Now, only governments use such ostentatious envelopes, and when a man so elegantly dressed as you are bulges his jacket with one of them, it is probably, well, you see. There's an elementary lesson in magic for you. Work on it for 20 years, and you may comprehend the brazen head.
As a matter of fact, I've just been showing it to the headmaster, because, of course, I'll have to resign as chairman of the Board of Governors. I was just coming to talk to you about it, Dunny.
Come along, then. We were going to have a drink.
Still the same old rat's nest. What are you going to do when you have to move, Dunny? How will you ever find room anywhere else for all this junk? Look at those books. I'll wager you don't use some of them once a year.
I like it very much. This room speaks... Oh, thank you. Yes, just ice. This room speaks of peace and a mind at work.
I wouldn't say that Dunny's mind was at work. Wish all I had to do was teach the same lesson every year for 40 years.
Well, you're forgetting his many and excellent books, are you not?
You mustn't misunderstand if I seem disrespectful toward the great scholar. We're very old friends. We come from the same little village. In fact, I think we might say that all the brains of Deptford, past, present, and doubtless to come, are in this room right now.
Might I be included in such a distinguished group?
Ah, sorry. Birth in Deptford is an absolute requirement.
Oh, I have that already. It was about my achievements in the world that I had doubt.
When I looked through your autobiography, I thought you were born somewhere in the far north of Sweden.
No, that was Magnus Isengrim. My earlier self was born in Deptford. If the autobiography seems a little high in color, you must blame Ramsay. He wrote it.
Dunny, you never told me that.
It never seemed relevant.
I don't remember anybody in the least like you in Deptford. What did you say your real name was?
Well, my real name is Magnus Isengrim. That is who I am, and that is how the world knows me. But before I found out who I was called Paul Dempster. And I remember you very well. I always thought of you as the rich young ruler.
Sorry, I just can't place you.
Perhaps you can recall my mother.
Oh, I don't think I could have known your mother.
Nor did I, really. The person I knew was a woman unlike anybody else's mother. She was called Hoor by people like you, Mr. Staunton.
I really don't remember. Are you sure?
Oh, quite sure. I've never been able to forget what she was or what people called her. Because, you see, it was my birth that made her like that. My father thought it was his duty to tell me so that I could do whatever was possible to make it up to her. My birth was what robbed her of her sanity. I was too young for the kind of guilt my father wanted me to feel. He had an extraordinary belief in guilt as an educative force. Now, I couldn't stand it. I cannot feel guilt now. But I can call up in an instant what it felt like to be the child of a woman everybody jeered at and thought a dirty joke, including you, the rich young ruler. But I'm sure your accent is much more elegant now. A lieutenant governor who said Hoor would not reflect credit on the crown.
I forget what you said your name was.
He's Paul Dempster.
Who may Paul Dempster be?
Do you mean to say you don't remember the Dempsters? In Deptford? The Reverend Amasa Dempster?
No, I don't remember what's of no use to me. I haven't been in Deptford since my father died. That's 26 years.
You have no recollection of Mrs. Dempster?
None at all. Why should I?
Dear God.
May I help myself to one of your cigars?
Wait. That's not a humidor.
What is this box?
It's what it says it is.
Rest in peace, Mary Dempster, 1889 to 1959. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. My mother's ashes.
Why would you keep a thing like that with you?
A form of piety, I suppose. A sense of guilt, unexpiated. Indolence. I've always been meaning to put them in some proper place, but I haven't found it yet.
Guilt?
Dear God. Liesl was right. I am fifth business. Yes, guilt. You see, Staunton and I robbed your mother of her sanity.
What?
When your mother was 6 months pregnant, Magnus, she was hit by a snowball which knocked her over and caused your premature birth. The snowball was thrown by you, boy. You were trying to hit me, but I dodged in front of Mrs. Dempster, and she was hit instead. That's what caused your birth, Magnus, and your mother's madness.
I see.
If I may say so, Dummy, I think you've let the thing build up into something it never was. You unmarried men are terrible fretters. I threw a snowball, at least you say so, and for argument's sake, let that go, and you dodged it. And that precipitated something which was probably going to happen anyhow. The difference between us is that you've brooded over it, and I've forgotten it. We've both done far more important things since. Now, I'm sorry if I was offensive to your mother, Dempster, but you know what boys are. They're brutes, because they don't know any better. Boys grow up to be men.
And very important men. Men whom the crown delighteth to honor.
Yes, and if you expect me to be diffident about that, you're wrong.
Men who retain something of the brutish boy, even.
I don't think I understand you.
Would this paperweight jog your memory?
Oh, why should it? It's an ordinary bit of stone. You've used it to hold down some of the papers on your desk for years. I've seen it 100 times. It doesn't remind me of anything but you.
It's the stone you put in the snowball you threw at Mrs. Dempster. I've kept it because I couldn't part with it. I swear, I never meant to tell you what it was. But boy, for God's sake, get to know something about yourself. The stone in the snowball has been characteristic of too much you've done for you to forget it forever.
What I've done? Listen, Dunny. One thing I've done is to make you pretty well off for a man in your position. I've given you tips nobody else got, let me tell you. And that's where your nice little nest egg came from. Your retirement fund that you're always whining
Need
about.
Need we go on with this moral bookkeeping? I'm simply trying to recover something of the totality of your life. Don't you want to possess it as a whole? The bad with the good? I told you once you'd made a god of yourself, and the insufficiency of it forced you to become an atheist. It's time you tried to be a human being. And maybe something bigger than yourself will come upon your horizon.
I see. You want to humiliate me in front of this man here. You seem to have been in cahoots with him for years. Well, let him hear this, since we're dealing in ugly truths. You've always hated me because I took Leola away from you.
My observation has been that we get the women we deserve, King Candolus. And those who eat jam before breakfast are cloyed before bedtime.
You know, the trouble with you,
Johnny,
is...
Gentlemen, deeply interesting though this is, Sunday nights are the only nights when I can get to bed before midnight, so I shall leave you.
I'm going to. Let me give you a lift to your hotel.
Thank you, Mr. Staunton.
Paul, do you want to take your mother's ashes with you?
No, thank you, Ramsay. I have everything I need.
It seemed an odd remark, but in the emotional stress of the situation, I paid no heed to it. Indeed, it was not until after the news of Boy's death reached me next morning that I noticed my paperweight was gone. Boy was not buried until Thursday. The Saturday evening following, I went to see Isengrim's Soiree of Illusions, as he now called it, at its last performance. During the brazen head of Friar Bacon, I was hiding behind the curtains of an upper box so that I could look down into the auditorium of our beautiful Royal Alexandra Theatre and watch the audience.
Times past.
Friar Bacon, Doctor Admirabilis, Master of all mysteries, Guardian of all secrets, will you speak to us tonight? Will you answer our questions?
I will answer three.
Ladies and gentlemen, I must ask for complete silence. If you have a question that needs answering, concentrate on that question. Do not speak, and Friar Bacon will choose and answer three. And now, complete silence, complete concentration. Friar Bacon, all-seeing, all-knowing, all-wise, what secrets can you sense here tonight? What questions need answers?
Who killed Boy Staunton?
killed by the usual cabal. By himself, first of all. By the woman he knew. By the woman he did not know. By the man who granted his innermost wish, and by the inevitable fifth, who was keeper of his conscience and keeper of the stone.
And that was when I had my seizure and was rushed to the hospital, as I was afterwards told. When I was well enough to read letters, I found one, a postcard to my horror, that read,
"Deeply sorry about your illness, which was my fault as much as most such things are anybody's fault. But I could not resist my temptation, as I beg you not to resist this one. Come to Switzerland and join the Basso and the Brazen Head. We shall have some high old times before the five make an end of us all. Love, Lisbeth."